is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. And I'm so excited I get to talk to Becky Miller Cripps, who is a Tuolumne Master Gardener, also former Master Gardener Coordinator, is one of the editors for the writers group, and just on and on and on. We could keep talking about Becky. But instead, I'm going to say hello to Becky. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Debbie. It's so good to be with you today. And hi to all of our listeners out there in Radio Land.
Oh, good. And the conversation we're having today is an offshoot from a previous conversation we had. We just didn't get a chance to finish the conversation, but part of gardening at home or the ability to garden at home is having or knowing what kind of resources are available to you. And I thought that was really great that you thought of that. So what kind of resources does the gardening public have available?
Well, today, Debbie, I would like to talk about three of my favorite online sources. And the first one, and this is assuming that everyone that is hearing us today has access to a computer, but what I'd like them to do is simply go to whatever search engine they use. I know I prefer Google, many people use other things, but if they just go and look up UCCE Central Sierra, that will pop up with the University of California Cooperative Extension webpage for the Central Sierra, which encompasses the counties of Amador, El Dorado, Calaveras, and Tuolumne. If they go to that website, there will be, when they scroll down the page, there will be some photos that they can click on, and one is the Master Gardener Program. When you click on the Master Gardener Program, a whole series of menu items comes up in the left margin. And in that series is a heading called Gardening Tips and also Favorite Gardening Resources. If they go to Gardening Tips, there's so much information available. People can find information about beneficial insects versus pests. There are how-to videos, things about information about problems with various pests. There's a topic on saving water in your garden landscape. And one of my very favorites is the vegetable planting dates, which is a PDF file that you can bring up that tells you, based on your elevation in the counties of Tuolumne and Calaveras, what can you plant at what time of the year. And I'm sorry, Debbie, I'm just really taking over and rambling on. Did you want to interject a comment or say anything?
No, I think you're doing great. But I did also want to point out to our listeners that on that same page, there's a little button off to the right-hand side that says Over the Garden Gate Radio. So they even though they can listen to this radio show on kaad-lp.org or at 103.5, we have all the radio shows, or just about all the radio shows, housed on the Tuolumne Master Gardener page.
That's a great addition to the resources that gardeners can find. So thanks, Debbie.
You're welcome. But also, if they wanted to find out information about some of the other programs like Master Food Preservers or Nutrition, or it seems like to me it's just endless, all the information that they can acquire.
Well, if they go to the front page of the UCCE program for the Central Sierra, they can find information on, as you said, so many of the programs. There's the 4-H youth development. There is an entire section on living with fire, because we're all in a fire-prone area and our ecosystems have developed in living with fire. There is a section on the agriculture programs within UCCE. the master food preservers, community health and nutrition, and then for people who are either involved in forestry or farming, there are sections on rangeland, livestock, forestry, and of course, one of my favorites, the UC California Naturalist Program. So people can find a ton of information from this website.
Right. And a lot of the programs are posting online classes, or they're free. They're free presentations. So you can read about things, you can watch things. There's just a wealth. I mean, I love going to that website. And every time I go there, I also learn more about it. I should also mention that our farm advisor, Scott Onetto, published a field guide to weeds, and that is online. I would call that an interactive book. But that is literally online. It has a wonderful search feature. So you can search for a particular weed. And then it's so clever, if I remember right, the pages will flip over to wherever that weed is. And so it's really fun to use. It's posted on the webpage. And I think it's even posted on the main page. But that is just a wonderful resource. And right now, I have to admit, I'm going crazy with the weeds, and I'm spending time identifying them, trying to figure out how to get rid of them, and I'm using that guide.
Sorry, Debbie, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I am facing the very same dilemma here in Jamestown, because the wonderful additional precipitation that we got in March is just pushing an incredible bloom of weeds this year, and I'm fighting them constantly. Which, if you don't mind me segueing into my next favorite resource, takes us to the University of California Integrated Pest Management website. And people, again, don't need to have the URL. They can simply Google it. If you just go to UCIPM, it will pop up for you. And then you click on the picture on the main page that says Home, Garden, Turf and Landscape Pests. And when you do that, there are weed photo galleries and weed identification tools that will help you figure out what's growing in your backyard or in your garden plot, and also give you information on how to deal with them.
You're right. That's a wonderful resource. And for me, I just find it so amazing that this is all free information. Normally when you go to a bookstore, or you might have to go to the library or wherever you're going, it costs a little bit of money to get some of this information. But here are all these websites, and it's just totally free information from the university.
And for me, that's the beauty of being under the auspices of an organization like the University of California, because Master Gardeners are here to present science-based information from the university to people in the community. And thus, it is part of the university's mission to make that information available free of charge to the community. So it's an awesome benefit.
Yes, extremely. What's also kind of interesting about that IPM website, they have two different sections within IPM. One is targeted for homeowners, so somebody with their garden, and then the other part is targeted for agriculture. So, I mean, if you're kind of curious how to remove something from a field of maybe, squash or tomatoes or something like that, you could find out, because it's all right there. I mean, you can go to the agriculture side, but with the homeowners in mind, that information is tailored strictly for the homeowner, somebody that has a variety of different plants in their garden. They don't have a one crop garden like agriculture does. So, which is really good to know too.
Well, thank you for pointing that out, Debbie, because I always make the assumption that the people that are listening to us are home gardeners, and that may not be the case. In fact, when you go to the home webpage of the, and I'll go ahead and give the actual address in case people are interested, but if you go to the IPM webpage, which is IPM, as in Integrated Pest Management, .ucanr.edu, that page brings up four different categories. One is home, garden, turf, and landscape pests, and that's for the home gardener. There are the agricultural pests, as you pointed out. There's also a link for natural environmental pests and one for exotic and invasive pests. So that website is totally an amazing source of information.
It is. It really is. And we sure have some invasive weeds. That I know. So that's something we got to make sure that we take care of, or at least try to make the attempt to take care of.
Very true. Now, not to get bogged down with invasive and exotic pests and weeds and things like that, I'd like to go back to another garden resource as far as information on what we can do and what we can plant, if that's all right.
Sure.
And I'd like to go to, it's called the University of California, California Garden Web. And here again, people can simply Google it or use whatever search engine they prefer. But the name of the website is the California Garden Web. It is hosted by the UC Statewide Master Gardener Program. And that website, again, is just a wealth of information. It goes from, categories include, from drought to flowers to gardening basic, on to poisonous plants and vegetables. And you can even click the link to find out what is your climate zone. I know many people are confused by the various numbers they see on plant labels. And here's a link that gives you information and also a map on how to determine your climate zone.
That's a great website. Again, that's one of those websites where you can spend a lot of time having fun, just
hours
cruising
and hours.
Through it. Hours and hours.
I get lost in this website.
Right.
If you're looking up a specific plant, like I have some wild blackberry vines, and I was wondering how severely I could cut them back or how to prune them compared to my raspberries. And so this website has everything. It has a separate category called growing berries in your backyard. It also has a glossary that's divided from A to M or from N to Z. And then it talks about growing grapes, indoor plants, landscapes, trees, shrubs, and vines. It just goes on and on and on.
Wow. Isn't that great? That's a wonderful resource. So you don't have to wait and maybe talk to somebody or however you would get your information. You could go right to that website and just find out immediately why maybe how to grow strawberries or any of the plants that we like to grow in the summertime in our vegetable garden. And other plants too, so which is a great resource. Now, besides blackberries, what have you gone to that site for? Just curious.
Grapes. I was gifted with several different kinds of heritage grapevines, and I had never grown grapes, and so there is a separate topic called growing grapes, and in parentheses it says table, wine, and raisins in your backyard, and so that was the first place I went for information on how to grow grapes in my backyard. And it seems to be working. All my grapevines have survived. I pruned them all this spring and they're all putting out brand new leaves and shoots. So far so good.
Oh my gosh, that's wonderful. So your blackberries are doing good. Your grapes are doing well.
My raspberries have already put out buds for the spring fruit season. So yeah, I'm pretty happy right now. Oh, and I need to report that on a Monday during this shelter in place COVID-19 restriction, I got a little restless. And so I put some potting soil into some cottage cheese containers, put it on the west and south facing window in my music room. And I have baby plants coming up to be transplanted into the garden as soon as the soil gets warm enough.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love seeing baby plants.
And since I may have been a little bit precipitous, shall we say, I was probably a little bit too early because I decided to sprout my zucchini plants so that they would be big and healthy when it was time to transplant them. They're going to way outgrow their space. They're growing fast on that windowsill.
Oh, well, there could be worse things. No. But hey, Becky, we ran out of time again.
It happened so quick.
Yes. We'll have to have you back again. I sure thank you for all the great information.
Well, thank you, Debbie. It's always a pleasure and so much fun.
Same here. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hello, this is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties, and you are with us at Over the Garden Gate, which is a show hosted by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. And today I have with me Lisa Page, who is the president of the Tuolumne Master Gardener Program. And Lisa has this phenomenal experience with vegetables, but we're going to talk about tomatoes today. Welcome, Lisa.
Hello, Debbie.
It's good to see you here. And I got to ask you, how long have you been growing tomatoes?
I would say about 27 years.
That's quite an experience. And you actually do something different. I normally, when I buy tomato plants, I buy the starts at the store. And I don't actually even start mine from seed, but you start yours from seed.
Yes, I like starting from seed because you have a wider variety to choose from. You can choose from even for what elevation that you live at, and you can look for attributes that will work. Let's say for, there are some varieties that were bred in like Siberia that will grow at a higher elevation and will handle cooler nighttime temperatures and still produce fruit. So,
that's...
and you have such a wide variety of tomatoes, colors, taste, size of plants, size of tomatoes, it's an endless choice of things that you can come up with. Where the nurseries nowadays are getting better with the variety of heirloom tomatoes that they offer, but I find that starting from seed and then saving my own seed from those open pollinated plants, that they become acclimatized to my particular growing area.
How interesting. So how do you start this process? How do you start from seed?
Well, most packets or seed starting things will tell you 8 to 10 weeks prior to your putting out date, which would be right after your last frost date. So I tend to start, I try to get started the beginning of March usually.
Okay.
I gather my materials, my seed starting medium, my pots and seed starting cells, I call them, you know, trays, all that. I gather it all up. I've picked out my varieties. And then I basically plant the seed. I put them under fluorescent lights, probably 12 to 14 hours of light a day. You want to keep your nighttime temperatures no lower than 55, because that'll slow down the germination. So a good range is 60 to 65 at night. And then what would be their light when the lights are on, which
mm-hmm.
would be like replicating daylight, you would like to try to stay 70 to 75 degrees.
Okay.
And then as they, when they have sprouted, you can look for your strongest plant and you can thin down to that. You just snip off the littler ones that you're, you know, you pick one.
Uh-huh.
And then after it's got its first set of true leaves, I try to wait till there's pretty good size. I don't know, maybe
right.
3 inches, but they'll have their first
okay.
set of true leaves. Then I'll transplant them into a larger container. Every time that I transplant them up, I bury the stem,
mm-hmm.
if I can, up to the lowest set of leaves, because it'll
okay.
get roots all along the stem, because there's these little hairs, if you look at a tomato stem,
mm-hmm.
tomato plant stem, and they're each a potential root. So every time I transplant it up, if I bury it again, by the time I put it out, it's got a really strong root system.
Gosh, that's great.
So a lot of times by the time that I'm ready to put them out, they'll be at the minimum the size of the starts that you have in the nurseries for sale. A lot
mm-hmm.
of times they're larger.
Oh.
So once again, when I plant them in the ground, I do that again. I will take off a few sets of leaves and bury them down one more time.
Okay.
Really deep. When I plant them, I like to put a little Epsom salt in the bottom of the soil. It's supposed to have an effect on helping with blossom end rot problems. Oh. I've done it for, well, probably 27 years now. But hopefully this is after you've amended your soil.
Okay, actually getting your soil ready for
prior to
tomato
this.
Plants.
But, you know, they're pretty forgiving. Tomatoes can grow like weeds, really. They can.
They can.
Yeah.
That's encouraging.
So it's really important that you do mulch around your plants, especially if you're planting really close to, like for up here, it's in Tuolumne County, like the middle of May. And I'm talking from probably elevation of around downtown Sonora upward. I mean, obviously, when you get above somewhere like Soulsbyville, when you get to Twain Heart and up, you're going to be planting a little later than the middle of May. I was told when I moved up here, don't plant before Mother's Day.
Right.
But with the way that the climate has shifted in our, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. We've had some Mays in the last few years where at the end of May we had 40-degree temperatures for a week at night, and they don't do well.
Right.
And if you don't mulch and it rains and the soil splashes up on the tomato leaves, you can get pathogens from the soil that get splashed up on the leaves.
Oh, my gosh.
Which can create early blight or late blight, which is really, it's pretty sad because the branches just start dying off, even sometimes when they have a tomato hanging on them. So
oh my gosh.
It's very important. And if you put them out earlier, just be prepared to go out and protect them. I was telling a friend the other day, she said she'd already planted. And I said, that's probably fine. I said, do you have some 5-gallon buckets handy? You can just run out there and put a 5-gallon bucket over
idea.
The top.
That's easy.
Yeah. Or even if you've got some pots.
Right.
1-gallon or 5-gallon.
Just anything.
Pots, anything like that. Or if they're in a place where you've got a cage over them, you can throw an old bed sheet or something over them to protect them.
Well,
that'll also stop some of that splashing up of the dirt if you haven't got the mulch down. So mulching is absolutely important. And not only for that particular reason, but as we go into the season, it helps conserve the water. It doesn't evaporate so much. And if you lay your mulch down thick enough, I use straw because it's inexpensive. It's easy to spread. It doesn't really draw too much nitrogen from the soil as it's sitting on it. Because anything that's sitting on the soil that's an organic material is going to tie up some of the available nitrogen, because as those microorganisms feel that touching the soil, they're going to want to start working on decomposing it.
Oh,
so when they do that, some of your nitrogen becomes unavailable to the plant until that microorganism's done decomposing that particular thing. So if in some cases you have to add a little supplemental nitrogen, but if you put too much nitrogen, you'll end up with a bushy plant and no fruit.
Oh gosh.
So it's
we don't
balance.
Want that.
So you know, if you just get a good, your three numbers are equal, that's a good way to be pretty sure you're not going to get excess nitrogen.
Okay.
But straw, I'll do it like 3-4 inches deep, and any weeds that pop up from the straw, it's usually a grass.
Okay.
Because I don't care how many times I've asked if something's weed free, I've never gotten a straw that is weed free.
Yeah.
But if it's deep, the only weeds that generally come up far from the seeds in the straw, and they pull up so easy that I just lay them back on top of this.
Oh, good idea. Now, do you, after all these years of growing tomato plants, do you have some favorites that you absolutely say, oh my gosh, it's not a great tomato year unless I grow this?
I would say Brandywine, Cherokee Purple, and I have, let's see, oh, there's one called a Kellogg Breakfast. It's a yellow tomato.
Kellogg Breakfast.
It's about the size of I've had up to, 8 to 10 ounce tomatoes at times.
Oh my gosh.
In years past, I've had I've had some tomatoes up to a pound of, like, that would be on the Brandywines.
That's huge.
Now, when you're growing, those are all, like, later season tomatoes, so you're going to be waiting until probably end of August, maybe middle if you're lucky, into September before you're actually getting a harvest off of those. So
okay.
In the meantime, I'll try to grow something like a Better Boy is a good variety. It's a hybrid. It's not a heirloom, but you get a nice red tomato. It comes on earlier,
right.
And you get a good harvest from them.
And most hybrids
are bred for disease resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the letters, the corns correspond with a particular virus, like tobacco mosaic virus or something like that. And it's resistant, though.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that. So
okay.
Resistant, it does not mean it won't get it, but the likelihood is less.
Pretty slim.
Yeah.
That's a good strategy.
And then cherry tomatoes, I always have to have a Sun Gold growing.
Oh, those are great.
Nice thing about cherry tomatoes, if I don't have enough room, because I get carried away with how many tomato plants I grow, I'll put them in big, like, 15-gallon pots, and they do just fine.
Oh,
just have to remember, tomatoes in pots will do just fine any variety, really.
Okay.
But you don't want to go with too small of a pot, because even in the large pot, you're going to have to water a lot more often than you do in when your bed is in the ground, or if you have a raised bed. So.
Right. How about, I think some people don't realize they have enough sun. Do tomatoes take quite a bit of sun, or how do you figure that out?
They'd like a good, 12 to 14 hours if they can get it. But you can do eight to 10 hours of full sun. It may take a little bit longer, but you'll still get tomatoes.
You'll still get tomatoes.
Yeah.
Well, that's encouraging.
Yeah.
I mean, that really is.
So, like, I've told people that they say, I don't have enough sun. I'll ask them, do you have a patio or a deck that gets
mm-hmm.
sunlight for this amount of time? And they say yes. I say, well, you can grow a tomato in a pot and still are able to. Like, if you live in an apartment
mm-hmm.
and you have a balcony or a patio, but you have full sun all day, you can grow one tomato plant and... For a small family, nice cherry tomato plant, especially if you have kids. They love cherry tomatoes.
Oh,
so.
The sun glow. I have to admit, that's one of my favorites.
So you set a bowl of cherry tomatoes on the table for kids. A lot of times they can eat that as a snack instead of munching on stuff that's not quite as good for them. So.
Oh, they're really good. Now, just kind of curious with Brandywine, I know quite a few people are probably familiar, but some people may not be. And what kind of fruit, what does that, I mean,
it's
why
like a,
is that
it's,
so
it,
special?
Well, we I think we're all pretty much familiar with the term beefsteak tomato.
Okay, meaning a much
it's a
larger.
Huge, yeah, it's a huge, it's a good sized tomato. It would be a slicing tomato, like when I was a child, it is what really the memory is from eating from my aunt's garden. She would have the large Brandywine style tomatoes. They're irregular shaped a lot of times,
mm-hmm.
but you could just slice them and eat them like that. So they would make tomato sandwiches with them.
Oh.
And it has
what
really,
about the flavor?
The flavor's just, it's really intense. There's probably a medium to high acid level. So if you're a person that doesn't really like tomatoes because of the acid flavor, it's not a bad flavor, but you
mm-hmm.
can taste it.
Sure.
From the citric acid in it, I guess it's citric acid. But there are varieties that have lower acid content. There's they have a scale
mm-hmm.
that I can't describe to you off the top of my head, but Brandywine's probably about 3/4 up on that scale.
Right.
Whatever number they use on the scale, but it's just a really yummy tomato flavor.
Uh-huh.
For a,
oh.
Then you know, you have good red beefsteak tomatoes, which is an old-timey
mm-hmm.
variety, where you're going to get that really intense tomato flavor.
You're not going to believe it, Lisa. We just ran out of time, so we're going to have you come back and talk some more.
And I could talk all day about tomatoes.
Well, it's a wonderful subject. I could eat tomatoes all day, especially some of the varieties you were talking about. So thank you very much, and we're going to say goodbye.